What?
Bullshit.
The blonde looked up, and a brilliant smile flashed across her face.
Why, hello, Bob.
She stood and walked around the desk, wrapping her arms around Bob's neck. Once in the embrace, Bob turned slightly so Daniel could see him. He crossed his eyes and lolled his tongue from his mouth. And with his left hand, he patted her back, while with his right hand, he mimicked squeezing her ass. Daniel stood there bug-eyed.
Tiffany, so good to see you.
The girl stepped back, flashed the smile again, and looked at Daniel. Bob caught on and introduced him.
Tiff, this is Daniel. Daniel, this is Tiffany.
Nice to meet you,
she replied, offering her hand, which he took, holding her eyes just a moment longer than business etiquette dictates. Bob broke up the moment.
Tiff, is your boss in?
She let out a huff of breath before heading back around the desk.
Yeah, he's here, but he's busy with everything going on.
I need to see him, and it's critically important I see him now.
I'm guessing from your tone you're not bringing good news?
No, I'm not, but he needs to hear it now,
Bob said with a tone of finality.
Go in and take a seat. I'll let him know you're waiting.
Why, thank you, beautiful,
Bob replied, as he flashed his own nicotine-stained smile. Tiffany returned his with a coy, off-the-shoulder smile of her own. Bob moved for a door to the right of the desk, and Daniel followed him. Looking at Tiffany, she gave him a smile as well. They entered another anteroom, a waiting area where the unwashed masses awaited their audience, with the power brokers behind the doors on the opposite side of the room. They each took a seat in the overstuffed leather chairs. Daniel ran his hand over the arm of his. This damn sure wasn't imitation. After a moment, Bob stood and walked across the room to a credenza and opened a lower door to reveal a mini-fridge.
Want a water or something?
Daniel looked over.
Yeah, sure. Water's good.
Bob tossed a bottle to him. Daniel couldn't help but notice the Fiji label. Downstairs, they had stopped putting spring water in the water coolers and switched to drinking water. He made a smirk and shook his head as he twisted the top off the bottle. Bob flopped back into his seat, noticing Daniel's annoyance.
Nothing but the best up here, buddy.
So I see. Hey, what's with Tiffany? You're fucking nuts, by the way. Bob laughed, blowing water out of his nose. With a grunt, he replied,
Yeah, hot as asphalt in July, huh?
Yeah, I'd say. You know there are cameras up there. Someone saw your little show.
Yeah. Know who saw it? My guys. Andy's probably already deleted that little piece of evidence.
A digital tone sounded, filling the small space. Bob, he'll see you now. Bob rose from his chair.
We're on,
and he headed for the door. Daniel followed him into a massive office. Opposite the door stood an impressively large and ornate antique desk. Behind it sat a man in his late 50s, Daniel estimated. He looked exactly like you would expect a banker to. He wore a business suit, the coat hanging behind him, sitting in only the vest. As they walked in, the man looked up, but did not smile.
Morning, Byron, Bob offered.
The man simply dipped his chin.
Bob?
Just an acknowledgement, nothing more.
What's on your mind?
He asked, then diverted his attention to some papers on his desk.
Have you seen what's going on outside? Bob asked.
Byron motioned to one of several TVs hanging on the wall to his right.
Of course, it's all over the news. Looks like more of the same.
When he finished speaking, he looked up as a tolerant father would at a child demanding his attention.
You're wrong about that. It's not more of the same. This crowd is bigger and getting closer to the building. I think we should take some preemptive action.
Bob returned, then crossed his arms over his chest. He was not about to be ignored. Byron rocked back in his chair and let out a sigh.
And what would you have me do? It's a job for the APD. We need to call off the staff for the day and close the building.
Byron practically leapt from his chair.
Are you out of your damn mind? You know what that would do to our business?
What business? Everything is shut down because of the attack. You don't need all those people here if this riot is the riot.
Call off the staff. I'll secure the building, and we can wait for this to all blow over.
Byron's face jerked into a sneer.
You don't have to tell me about the damn attack. I have agents from the FBI and the SEC crawling up my ass with a damn magnifying glass.
He looked at his watch.
As a matter of fact, they should be here any minute. Besides, security is your job. That's what I pay you for.
All the more reason to shut the building and get everyone out of here. Security is my job, and I'm telling you what needs to be done. If you choose to ignore it, that's on you.
Then Bob had another thought.
Besides, if the building is empty for the most part, and the shit hits the fan around here, I'll be able to make sure you get out of here without trying to wade through a couple hundred people.
Byron stood there for a second, considering the last point. If the shit did indeed hit the fan, the only person he was worried about getting out of here was himself. He looked up at Bob, then at Daniel. Jutting his chin in Daniel's direction, he asked,
"Who's that?"
As though Daniel weren't standing in front of him.
Bob looked over his shoulder at Daniel.
"He works in IT and is my contact with them during this little incident."
Byron looked at Daniel.
"You're the one responsible for fucking my network up, making me the Judas of the entire banking world?"
Daniel stood there stunned, not knowing what to say. His mouth was dry and his voice refused to work. Finally, Bob came to his rescue.
"No, he's the one that pulled the network down from the outside world. He's the one that saved whatever ass you have left."
Byron shot Bob a look.
"Fine, we'll shut the building. Tiffany will take care of getting the emails out."
He paused for a moment and pointed at Bob.
"You do not leave this building, though. Not until I do."
Byron leaned over and pressed an intercom button on his desk and asked Tiffany to come in.
"Now, if you gentlemen don't mind, I have shit to do."
Bob didn't reply. He simply turned and grabbed Daniel by the arm and headed for the door. They passed Tiffany in the anteroom.
"Sorry," Bob said as he passed her.
She looked at him, confused.
"For what?"
Bob smiled.
"You'll see. And make sure you get out of here as soon as you can, too."
Tiffany was still looking confused as the two men left the room. Daniel followed Bob to the elevators, not the freight elevator they took up, but the private car for the man in the big office. Bob waved his Prox card at the reader by the button, then pressed the now illuminated call button. Daniel just stood there, not saying a word. He was still choking on his tongue. When the car arrived and the doors opened, they were greeted by four men in blue blazers with FBI emblazoned on them in big yellow letters. Bob stepped aside as the men exited, nodding at them as they passed, and he quickly ushered Daniel into the car. Once inside, Daniel let out a long breath, running his hands through his hair. Spinning around to face Bob, he half shouted,
"Dude, why in the hell did you take me up there with you?"
"What, you scared to swim with the sharks?"
Daniel just shook his head. Then his phone vibrated.
"Nice. Looks like I gotta get home."
Bob leaned against the wall, watching the numbers tick by on the display over the door.
"You're not going anywhere."
Daniel jerked his head up.
"Why the hell not? I'm on the list here. It says I don't need to come in.
Since I'm here, I think I'll leave.
Let's go to my office and take a look at things.
The mob on the monitor was not the same one he had seen earlier. Daniel was shocked at what he saw. There was a line of police in front of the bank, all decked out in riot gear, shields, helmets, and gas masks. In the center of the road was a burning police car, several piles of burning tires, and dumpsters full of flames. A figure erupted from the crowd of rioters wearing one of the masks from V. A flaming trash can over his head. He ran towards the police in an effort to hurl the can of fire. As soon as he crossed the center line of the road, marked by the piles of burning tires, the man crumpled and fell to the pavement. In the bottom right corner of the screen, a police officer was racking a shotgun, the spent shell of a less-than-lethal round bouncing on the pavement. At the same moment, a phalanx of officers rushed forward, the officers in the front holding shields up to deflect the bottles and rocks pelting them. Just as with the Roman legions, the second row of officers held their shields over their heads, blocking the missiles landing on them. They covered the man in the road as additional officers in the rear grabbed the stricken man and pulled him back to the police line. The line of rioters surged forward, but were immediately turned back with streams of pepper spray from fire extinguisher-sized canisters.
"Holy shit," Daniel said as he watched the scene unfold.
"That's nothing. Just wait till it's live rounds they're using," Bob replied.
"Bob, you want us to lock down the building?"
Andy asked from his console. Bob scanned the various cameras.
"Yeah, everything on the ground level. Send out an email telling everyone to take the pedestrian bridge to the garage. We should never have opened it in the first place. Those idiots upstairs want everything to look normal."
Bob gestured towards the screen.
"Does that look normal to you?"
"Done,"
Andy replied. On a couple of the monitors, the large gates began to lower on interior hallways of the first floor. If Bob had had his way, they would have remained down. But earlier in the day, Byron had insisted they be raised. Now, he wasn't even going to bother to ask. The building was getting locked down. Daniel's phone vibrated, and he pulled it off to check the message.
"Where are you?"
Malcolm's signature was under it. Teague closed the phone and let it drop into his lap as his head fell back onto the couch. He let out a long breath that was half groan, half regret. Coming back to the moment, he pulled the cover off the back of the phone and removed the SIM card. Sitting up, he tossed it into a burn bucket with some fuel, lit it, and watched as it disappeared in the flame. Crossing the room to where his pack sat beside the door, he reached into it and took another card out and inserted it into the phone. He'd only been here for 2 days, and it was time to move again. The ambush happened 3 weeks ago. He thinks it's been 3 weeks now, and since then, he hasn't spent more than 4 days in one spot. Everyone involved in the ambush had been on the move, just as he had. The ambush had been a spur-of-the-moment mission, and while they had been looking for a chance to make a stand, the roadblock had just fallen in their lap. As soon as contact was broken at the scene, they immediately separated into smaller cells. These smaller cells continued to break up until every militiaman was on his own. Each person was left to their own devices, with one simple goal. Don't get your ass caught. In this manner, no one knew what the other's plan was, unless, of course, you ran your mouth. The three militia members caught so far were members of the same cell. They made a group plan and discussed it in detail with one another. When the first of them was apprehended, the other two fell like dominoes. In their plan, they all agreed not to be taken alive. "From my cold, dead hands," was the unanimous cadence shouted by the three. In the end, only one of them even fired a shot, for which he was immediately shot multiple times in return. Teague's plan was a little more sophisticated. He actually had a network of people in place to help him. Not that they knew why they were doing the things he asked. He'd known them all for so long that when he called, they answered. The network he was relying on was so far removed from him that if the feds ever did manage to put it together, he would already be long gone. So far, everything had worked out. He was already in Arkansas, and this next ride would get him into Alabama. Once in Alabama, it wouldn't take too long to make his way to Atlanta. He just hoped his cousin would let him crash at his place. Daniel looked at the phone and grunted. Bob looked over and he showed him the message. Bob snorted and took the phone. Daniel watched as he typed a reply. "Been sent home. All non-essential personnel have been furloughed today." He sent the message and handed the phone back. Daniel took it and snapped it back into the cradle, giving Bob a smile as he did. "What now?"
"Let's go get a coffee."
Daniel nodded, and the two of them headed for the door. On the way out, Bob said,
"Andy, call me if anything happens."
"Sure thing, boss."
They took the elevator down to the level with the pedestrian bridge. The little coffee shop was located inside the building where the bridge connected, and they ordered a coffee before the two ladies working there shut down. They took up a seat at one of the high tables where they could watch as all the employees left.
"How bad do you think it's going to get out there?" Daniel asked.
Bob took a sip of the coffee before replying.
"Don't know. It may blow over, or they may try and burn the damn city down. Either way, I didn't want the building full."
Daniel nodded and looked out across the small mezzanine area where the shop was located. It opened up onto the large foyer of the main lobby, and the open space there continued up for one more floor. From where Daniel sat, he could see the windows in the front of the building, though at the moment, all he could see was the back of the large security shutters covering them. The sound of Bob's Zippo popping open caught his attention, and he looked back just in time to see him light a smoke.
"Are you freaking nuts?"
Bob blew out the smoke.
"What? Who's going to complain?"
"Still, you're not supposed to smoke in the building." Bob flicked some ash into an empty creamer cup.
"Ah, come on. You're also supposed to pay your taxes on time, wait 30 minutes after eating before you swim or eat red meat. Come on, man. You can't be that big a pussy."
Daniel's back stiffened. "I'm no pussy."
"Calm down there, John Wayne. Just fucking with you."
Daniel sipped his coffee. Who the hell did this guy think he was, anyway? Daniel's phone vibrated. Malcolm again.
"I'm leaving now. You need to be here in the morning."
Daniel jumped up from the chair, startling Bob.
"What?"
"Malcolm's headed down here now. I don't want him to see me. Let's go."
"I ain't worried about him. Let's finish our coffee."
Bob shook his head and took another sip. The elevator bank was only 20 or so feet away, and he was able to hear the ding announcing the car's arrival. With nowhere to go, Daniel ran around the counter of the coffee shop and crouched down. Bob was laughing at him as he did. Malcolm came around the corner of the elevator bank and saw Bob, who was still laughing. He walked over and stood on the other side of the half wall that enclosed the cafe area. Bob simply sipped his coffee, never acknowledging the other man's presence. After a minute or two, Malcolm got irritated.
"Why are you still here, Bob? I thought everyone was told to leave."
"Actually, the email said all non-essential personnel were sent home."
"I'm essential," Bob replied with a smile.
"You know you aren't allowed to smoke in here," Malcolm replied in an attempt to get the upper hand. Bob's response was to light another one up. He inhaled deeply, while looking Malcolm in the eye, then blew out three perfect rings into the air. When he finished, he smiled.
Sasumi!
Malcolm walked off in a huff. Bob smiled at himself. It wasn't every day you got to piss someone off so easily. Daniel waited behind the counter, not wanting to chance a look and getting spotted by Malcolm. Bob left him there for a couple of minutes before he finally said,
"Coast is clear."
Daniel peered over the counter with one eye, looking the cafe over. The only person he saw was Bob, sipping on his coffee and smoking. Cautiously, he stood up and walked around the counter, still looking for Malcolm. Finally making his way back to the table, he took a seat across from Bob.
"What'd he say?" Daniel asked.
"Who?"
Daniel lifted his hands off the table.
"What do you mean, who?"
Bob laughed.
"Don't worry. He's got no idea you're here."
Byron suddenly appeared, having come down his private elevator with Tiffany. He has two of the security guards with him. His briefcase at his side, he looked at Bob and said,
"These guys are escorting me home."
He waved his hand in the air. "I'm not taking any chances with all this." Bob smiled.
"Sure thing, Byron. I can understand."
As the two men talked, the elevator dinged again. Daniel turned just in time to see Amber round the corner. He rolled his eyes and muttered under his breath, "Shit." She walked up and smiled coyly.
"Hi, Daniel. I was hoping you could help me. I don't have my car today. Can you give me a ride home?"
Daniel shook his head.
"No, sorry, I'm not leaving. I have to stay here to work on the breach."
Byron shot Daniel a look.
"Breach? Is that what you call it? A fucking breach?"
Bob put his hand on Byron's shoulder.
"Give the kid a break. He's an IT guy. That's what they call it."
Amber's lips formed a pout.
"Oh, I'll find some way."
Tiffany smiled.
"I can give you a ride."
Byron was eyeing Amber up and down. Like a predator sizing up its prey, he said,
"I'll give you a ride. I have a car and driver."
Nodding at the two security men, he added,
"Not to mention these fellas."
But just as Byron thought, he was sizing Amber up. She, too, was like a cat with a mouse. She smiled.
"That would be very kind of you," she replied.
She never acknowledged Daniel again, as a much more worthy conquest now presented itself. The group quickly walked off as the two sized one another up, like a starving man before a buffet. Daniel rubbed his head.
"That was fucking weird."
Bob laughed.
"Business as usual, my friend."
Malcolm looked down at the crowd below the bridge as he crossed. They looked pissed. One guy, young black kid in a gray hoodie, looked up, locking eyes with him. The kid was shouting something, but no way he could hear it up here. Malcolm just stared back at him. His apparent indifference sent the kid into a rage. He tore the red bandana from his face and began to scream. Then, in a final act of defiance, he gave Malcolm the finger. Malcolm just shook his head and continued to the garage, where he took the elevator up to the next level where he was parked. Malcolm was digging around in his pocket for his keys when he stopped in his tracks. He stood there for a moment. Certainly, he wasn't seeing what he thought he was seeing. But there sat Daniel's van in his usual spot.
Son of a bitch!
That little shit. Sure, he was good at his job, but he was the biggest pain in the ass. The thought passed through his mind that if he weren't so damn good, he could terminate him. But then he knew deep down that he couldn't do half of the stuff that Daniel could.
The kid really was good.
Malcolm located his car, hit the button, and the locks popped open, and soon he was heading down to the exit. When he got to the exit, he was forced to stop. There was a big gate blocking the exit. One of the security officers approached him on the driver's side. Malcolm was surprised, as he had not seen the guy until he was almost at the window. Malcolm put the window down as the guy got there.
"Can I get out?"
Malcolm asked.
"Hang on a sec,"
the security man keyed his radio.
"Got one ready to exit. Is it clear?"
The radio crackled with a reply.
Yeah, looks all right. There's one guy out there, but he looks okay." "All right, open it up."
Malcolm and the security officer watched as the big steel gate rattled and groaned while rising. Once it was high enough for the car to clear, the security officer told him to go ahead. As Malcolm pulled out, he looked to his right, checking for cars. Then his windshield exploded. Shocked is not the word for what he felt. Suddenly, someone was at his car door, trying to get in. Malcolm was startled to see a young guy in a gray hoodie with a red bandana over his face. He was pounding on the glass and screaming. Malcolm was stunned. He didn't know what to do. Shock prevented him from moving.
"Go, go, go!"
the security officer was screaming. The kid at the car window ignored the screaming guard, or maybe he didn't even notice the man. Malcolm looked in the rearview mirror at the security officer, who was frantically waving for him to go. Then he looked to his right, out the passenger side window, and he gasped. A sea of people was pouring around the corner of the garage. It looked like those videos of the tsunami that struck Indonesia, but instead of water, it was people. Looking to his left again, the kid was still there, but he had dropped a pack off his back and pulled a metal bar out of it. He took a battered stance at the window with the bar. A series of pops went off in rapid succession, and the kid fell to the floor of the garage. The security agent appeared at the window.
"Damn it, man, fucking go!"
he shouted, while holding his pistol on the stricken man. Finally, Malcolm floored the gas and took off. The security officer keyed his radio, calling for the gate to be closed immediately. The crowd on the street was still running towards the open gate. The gate began to lower, and the security officer backpedaled into the garage, weapons still drawn, with an eye on the shrinking opening. Bob looked at the message that was marked urgent. "Need you up here now, Andy."
"Come on, let's go back to my office," Bob said as he stood up, dropping the butt of a cigarette into the empty cup.
"What's up?"
Daniel asked.
"Don't know, but I bet it ain't good."
Bob watched the video for the third time. He simply couldn't believe what he was seeing. On the screen, beside the one playing the recently recorded video, was the live shot from the camera outside the garage. The crowd out there was still growing, and two cars parked on the other side of the street were already on fire. All types of objects were being thrown at the building. Several people were using the post of a street sign to batter the gate. Bob reached for a radio, sitting in a cradle beside Andy.
"David, soon as you can, I need to see you up here."
The reply that came back was distorted by the sounds of banging on the metal gate. Mixed with shouts, it was almost inaudible.
"You gonna send someone else down here to relieve me first?"
Bob thought about it for a moment.
"Andy, pull up to the front of the building."
An exterior view of the front of the building filled the monitor before him. It looked like most of the people out there had moved around towards the garage. At the moment, things were quieter out there. Bob keyed his radio.
"S1, S4.
"Go for S4.
"Go relieve S3.
"Roger that, on my way."
Andy spun around in his seat.
"Want me to call 911?
"Not yet. Let's see what David has to say first. It's not like they'd come right now anyway."
Daniel pointed to the screen. "Looks like they're already on their way." Bob looked up as Andy spun around. He quickly brought up a monitor to the center of the screen. In the bottom left corner of the screen, the top of the metal gate of the garage exit could be seen, along with part of the crowd gathered there. On the top half of the screen, the Atlanta PD, in full riot gear, was forming up. A skirmish line was already formed, and they were advancing one step at a time, banging their batons on the top of their shields. The crowd paid them little attention.
Shit! Andy, call Carlos and tell him what's going on.
Daniel looked at Bob. Who's Carlos?
He's an LT with the Atlanta PD, a good friend of mine. I need coffee. Anyone else?
Yeah, I could use some, Daniel said. Daniel followed Bob into his office.
See if you can find a cup, Bob said, as he blew stale ashes out of a cup on his desk.
Daniel was standing beside the coffee pot, going through the various cups scattered around it. His face appeared as ill as he felt, looking into some of the cups. He was certain some of these would be an interest to the CDC.
Found lots of cups. You got a clean one anywhere?
Bob was wiping his cup out with his tie.
Look under the counter. Should be some styrofoam cups under there.
Much to his relief, Daniel found one cup still in the plastic sleeve and poured himself a brew. The liquid was dark, really dark, like it had been on the burner all day. Bob poured a cup without a second thought and took a long drink. He looked up to see the security guard from the garage standing outside his door.
What the hell happened? Bob asked.
David ran his hand across his face.
I'm sure you already saw the video. What was I supposed to do? Let him beat the guy's brains in? If the dumbass would have just driven off, it wouldn't have happened. But he just sat there looking all stupid. Yeah, we saw the video, but you gotta know that killing one of them is just going to make things a lot worse out there, Bob said, shaking his head. I know, sorry. But I couldn't let that dumb shit get beat. Who was that asshat, anyway?
His name's Malcolm, head of IT security, Daniel said. David looked at him.
You mean that guy was in charge of the department that caused most of this shit? Those people are rioting out there because they can't get to their money or use their damn food stamps. And I saved his ass? Shit. If I had known that, I would have stepped back and watched. It's IT's fault this shit is getting worse. Careful there, David. Daniel here works for that man, Bob said. Don't worry. I think Malcolm's an asshat, too. And for the record, there were already riots before the whole bank holiday thing, Daniel said.
Andy stuck his head into Bob's office.
Bob, Carlos on, too.
Bob walked around his desk and fell into his chair, paused for a moment, looking at the phone, then picked it up, pressing the button for line two at the same time.
How's business, Carlos?
Market's peaking. What do you need, Bob?
I guess you know things are a little hairy down here right now.
Yeah, the riot guys are out. We should have the protesters cleaned out soon. They're bringing in a sound cannon right now. That should run them off.
Good. It should make it easier for you guys to get to the crime scene.
Bob shook out a smoke and lit it. There was a pause on the other end.
What crime scene? Carlos asked. We were evacuating the building earlier, and one of our people was attacked by someone in the mob. I'm sorry about that, Bob, but right now, we just don't have the time to deal with it.
Carlos was getting irritated with this trivial situation, considering what was going on throughout the city.
That's not the issue. One of my guys shot him.
Are you fucking serious? Carlos shouted. Damn it, Bob.
Look, I got it all on video. It's a clean shoot.
Where's the actor? Carlos asked, in exasperation.
That's the real problem. He went down just outside our security doors in the parking garage. The crowd down there is beating the shit out of the door, and we can't see the body now.
Shit. What exit?
I'll see if we can get it cleared out.
It's the north exit.
You've got a riot squad just down the street from them now. If your guys can push them down the block, we can get in there.
You aren't getting in anywhere. Just stay out of it.
I'll see what I can do about getting them cleared out, then get back to you.
Keep your shooter on site. He can't leave.
10-4, Carlos. Let me know if we can help, Bob said.
As if people weren't already mad enough at the banks, then you guys, one of the banks, whack one of the poor demonstrators, Carlos said, with clear irritation.
Poor demonstrators, my ass, Bob said with a snort.
Well, that's how the media is describing them.
They're going to have a field day with this when they find out about it. You're going to have cameras shoved so far up your ass, you'll be able to taste them.
I'll be in touch,
Carlos said, and hung up. Bob hung up the phone and looked up at David.
How's it look?
David asked.
He's pissed, but you should be all right. Go get a drink and take a break.
David nodded and left the office. Daniel waited until he was gone to comment on how casual David acted after shooting someone. Bob told him David was a vet that had spent 6 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He'd killed before. For the next several minutes, they watched as the APD tried to push the crowd back. Volley after volley of tear gas was fired into the crowd, many of which were thrown back. Riots and unrest have been going on for so long that many people were now coming out equipped with their own gas masks. While their numbers were low, they made up the frontline troops in the gas war with the police. The police would deploy gas and rush the mob. The rioters would fall back a bit, regroup, and surge towards the officers, who would then deploy another round of gas as they fell back, before regrouping and charging the rioters again. It was essentially a stalemate. Neither side really had the upper hand. While both sides were constantly being reinforced, the police had the advantage in equipment.
Holy shit! What the hell is that thing? Daniel asked as a large, hulking vehicle came into view.
It's about to get really interesting, Andy said, as he guided a camera on the behemoth, zooming in as he did. Bob chuckled.
Yeah, unless they got some really good hearing protection, they aren't going to stand in front of that thing very long.
The riot squad parted to let the truck pull through to the front of their line. The appearance of the thing sent the crowd into a renewed fervor, jumping up and down and throwing everything that they could break loose at the officers. Once the officers were reorganized, they began to move forward, keeping pace with the truck. Initially, the crowd began to fall back in anticipation of what the truck may do. When nothing happened, except for the officers gaining ground, they decided to stand their ground. Once the crowd stopped falling back, the LRAD opened up on them. The effect was profound and immediate.
Holy shit! Daniel shouted, as anyone in the direct path of the weapon fell to their knees and cupped their ears.
People began to run in every direction. It was an impressive sight on the cameras, watching the sea of bodies move as if one organism, enveloping everything in their path.
Oh yeah, that got their attention, Bob said as he lit a cigarette.
The sound cannon was having the desired effect, and the crowd fell back farther down the block. The truck was finally in front of the exit of the parking garage. It pulled over towards the door and stopped parallel to it in the street. The doors on the rear opened, and some officers quickly exited, running the couple of feet to the roll-up door. Other trucks pulled up as well, more backup for the officers on the ground.
There's Carlos, Bob said.
Andy was already swinging the camera around so they could look down on the scene. What they saw was Carlos standing there, looking around, but no corpse was in the frame. Carlos pulled a cell phone from his pocket and started to dial. "Shit," Bob said, as his phone started to ring.
"What you see down there, Carlos?"
"There's nothing here. No body, no blood, nothing. You sure he went down?"
Carlos shouted into the phone over the chaos surrounding him.
"I've got it on video. He was down. Someone in the crowd probably carried him away."
Across the street from the bank's parking garage was another parking structure. This one served several businesses on the block and was open to the public, using those little kiosks to pay by entering your space number. Shorter than the enormous garage across the street, it was only two stories. Suddenly, the camera on the garage exit flickered, and another view took its place. Bob looked at Andy, wondering what the hell he was doing. Seeing the video feed explained it in a flash. A group of people was running across the top deck of the garage towards the side bordering the street. Carlos was saying something to him on the phone when Bob cut him off.
"Carlos, on the roof behind you guys. People are moving in on you."
"What?"
Carlos shouted back.
"On the roof of the other garage."
On the screen, they watched as the people made it to the edge of the parapet wall. They watched with horror as they lit Molotov cocktails.
"Behind you! Look up! You've got incoming!" Bob shouted back.
On a small image, they watched as Carlos finally caught on to what was happening. He was shouting at the other officers and pointing up at the garage just as the flaming missiles came over it in a slow arch. The officers began to run for cover, taking up positions behind the truck, between it and the bank's security door.
"Son of a bitch!"
Bob shouted as he headed for his office. Andy and Daniel were watching the camera feeds when Andy quickly zoomed in on a figure. He was moving in a low crouch to the wall. It wasn't until the camera had zoomed in enough that they were able to see the AK-47 he was carrying.
"Bob, one of them's got a gun," Andy called out.
Bob came out of his office holding an AR in each hand and an OD bag slung over his shoulder. Daniel was wide-eyed.
"What the hell are you doing?"
Bob thrust one of the war hogs into his hands.
"Follow me."
Then he snatched a radio from the charger on Andy's console.
"Keep me informed on what's happening."
10-4, boss.
Bob headed for the door and paused just outside it, looking at Daniel.
"You coming or not?"
Daniel simply nodded and followed him out the door. In the elevator, Bob told him what his plan was. They were going to go to the top of their parking garage, which would overlook the one across the street. He would call Carlos and ask if they needed their help suppressing the group on the roof. Daniel didn't say anything, just nodded his head. Bob pulled two magazines from the bag and handed them to Daniel. He tucked one into the back pocket of his jeans, and the other he inserted into the rifle, giving it a tap. As soon as they exited the elevator and headed for the pedestrian bridge to the garage, Bob was on his phone.
"Damn it!"
he shouted when Carlos's voicemail picked up. He tried two more times on the way to the top of the garage with the same result. Making it to the edge of the garage roof, he was able to look down and see Carlos and some of the other officers taking cover behind the truck as Molotovs broke on the other side of it, sending thick clouds of black smoke swirling up and forcing Daniel and Bob both to fall back.
"Bob, what do you want to do?"
Bob didn't answer. He tried his phone again. This time, Carlos answered.
"Carlos, there's a guy with an AK on top of that garage."
Bob made his way to the edge and looked down. This time, he could see Carlos. Looking down the street, he could see that the crowd was reforming, albeit farther away this time. Daniel was looking down in the garage across the street and could see everyone there. The man with the AK was peering over the top of the wall at the officers. Then, the officers launched tear gas at them.
"You guys need to get the hell out of there!" Bob screamed into the phone.
"We're fucking trying! You see all the damn fire?" Carlos shouted back.
"Yeah, I do. Look up."
"What?"
"Look up, dumbass!"
Bob was looking down when Carlos leaned away from the building to see him.
"What the hell are you doing up there?"
"When I saw the guy with the AK, I came up here in case you guys needed some help."
"We don't need any help. I told you to stay out of it. Are you armed?"
"What fucking good would I be if I weren't?"
Daniel hit Bob.
"Gun!"
Daniel's warning was immediately followed by a volley of shots, causing both men to jump. The riot police on the road began to scatter, looking for anywhere to take cover. At the same moment, almost as if it had been coordinated, a half dozen flaming tires came rolling down the road towards the besieged officers. From below, the AK was answered with return fire. Most, but not all of the crowd that had reformed farther down the street began to scatter once again. Those that stayed began to rush the police. Bob looked over to see Carlos firing a handgun. Daniel was looking at the shooter across the road. He could plainly see the man, and then he looked at Bob, who was looking down at Carlos, and finally at the warhog in his own hands. He charged the rifle.
"Carlos, you want us to take him out?"
Two officers were down in the street. Bob watched as Carlos looked at them, then at the shooter, who saw him and switched his fire to the back of the truck.
"Carlos, damn it, we can take him out!"
"Take him out! Shoot! Shoot!"
Carlos shouted into the phone. Bob looked up at Daniel as his rifle barked. Daniel fired round after round, about a half a second apart. Bob looked across the street to see the shooter sprawled on the ground. Another person tried to grab the AK, and Bob dropped his phone and quickly engaged him, felling the man with two shots. The others began to try and take cover. A milk crate full of cocktails was sitting just far enough back that Bob was able to put rounds into it, spraying the flammable liquid in a wide area. Bob ejected the mag in his rifle and dug through the bag, pulling out another with red tape around it, jammed it into the rifle, and began firing at the spreading pool of gas. The tracers streaked across the street. On the third round, a ball of flames and thick black smoke erupted. Both men stopped firing and watched the smoke rise. The others on the deck across from them were running for the exit, rounding the corner and heading down the ramp, out of sight. Bob was brought out of his trance by the sounds of shouting on the road below. Looking down, he could see officers helping their fallen to the truck. The crowd had fallen back farther down the block, probably as a result of the gunfire. Carlos looked up and gave Bob a wave. He waved back just as Carlos climbed into the back of the truck and shut the door. It quickly started to move, heading back the way it had come. But the rioters on the street were trying to capitalize on the moment. They were rushing headlong at the retreating officers. The LRAD opened up again, to little effect. One of the other trucks that came up to provide support began to fire numerous rounds of CS gas in rapid succession. But this, too, had little effect. These were professional agitators, and they were wearing gas masks and hearing protection. When the gas in the LRAD had no effect, the truck changed tactics and quickly drove towards the approaching rioters. Once in range, it suddenly emitted a thick orange stream from a nozzle mounted to its roof. The sticky pepper spray worked and stopped them in their tracks. To make sure no one tried to assist them, an officer stepped from the truck with a handheld launcher and fired several canisters onto the road behind them before quickly getting back in the truck. These weren't gas canisters. They emitted a small cloud of smoke, but there just wasn't enough volume to gas. Some protesters were running to the aid of those stricken with the sticky foam. As they got to the area where the canisters landed, they halted in their tracks, covering their mouths and noses. And then they retreated the way they had come. Those still fighting the foam were stuck and had to endure the overpowering stink of the skunk bombs. It also makes a very effective area denial weapon because once deployed, it can linger for up to 6 weeks and only be neutralized with a proprietary soap. Daniel and Bob soon discovered the power of the weapon from their rooftop position when the odor, carried by the urban wind currents created by tall buildings and narrow roadways, took it up to them. Bob coughed and covered his face.
What the hell is that?
Daniel buried his nose into the crook of his elbow.
Holy hell, what is that? Smells like a cross between something dead and shit.
He was backing away from the edge of the wall, trying to find relief.
That's just god-awful, Bob shouted,
as he ran for the opposite side of the parking deck. But Daniel took a minute to reflect on what had just happened. Daniel stood there gawking at the scene across the street from him, at the man he had just killed. The man was sprawled out, like someone in the middle of making a snow angel, only the body was on fire. He was jarred back to reality by his phone ringing. At first, he didn't notice it. The vibrating is what finally got his attention. Plucking the phone from the clip, he looked at it and was confused. He shook his head and looked again. It was his home number on the screen.
Hello? Daniel?
Yeah, who the hell is this?
It's Teague.
Teague?
Yeah, your cousin.
How the hell did you get in my house?
The door was open. Hope you don't mind that I let myself in.
Daniel had to think about that for a minute. He was certain he had locked the door. It would be stupid to go out and not lock it.
Yeah, sure. What are you doing in town? Just bumming around. Thought I'd drop in and see you. When you coming home?
Don't know. Things are a little weird at work today.
I bet. Been watching the news. Looks like the shit's hit the fan downtown.
Daniel looked back across the street.
You have no idea. Just hang out. I'll call you when I'm ready to come home.
Cool. I'll be here, drinking your beer.
Daniel ended the call, hoping there was somewhere he could buy some beer on the way home, because he damn sure was going to need a drink after today.
Who is that? Bob asked.
My cousin just came into town.
He sure picked a hell of a time for a visit.
Yeah, well, he has never been real bright. We grew up together. Spent all our summers together, terrassing around the woods. You know, just being kids.
Let's head back to my office.
Daniel slung the carbine over his shoulder and suddenly felt sick. He leaned on the edge of the parapet. His head spun and his stomach was in knots. Suddenly, he knew he was going to be sick and leaned forward and puked over the side. After emptying his stomach, he was wiping his mouth when Bob asked,
"Feel better?"
Looking at Bob, Daniel replied,
"Don't know what happened."
Bob lit another cigarette.
"First time, huh? Happens to everyone the first time."
"First time?" Daniel asked, unsure exactly what Bob was talking about. Gesturing with the cigarette towards the other side of the street, Bob replied,
"Killing someone. Happens to everyone the first time. Well, almost everyone. Come on, let's get back to my office so you can sit down."
When they walked in, Andy was replaying the video of the shooting. He had caught on to what was happening and had trained a camera on the top deck of the garage. Daniel glanced at the screen, then looked away. The scene playing over and over in his head was bad enough. He didn't need to see a live-action replay. Bob walked by without noticing the video. He went straight to his office, and Daniel followed him. Bob leaned his rifle by the door in his office before sitting down behind his desk. Daniel leaned his rifle by the door as well and sat in one of the office chairs. Bob snatched a coffee cup from his desk and observed the bottom of it with dried, crusted coffee. He wiped it out with the tail of his tie, then set it down on the desk and repeated the process with another. Opening the bottom drawer of his desk, he pulled out a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue Label and poured two fingers in each cup, handing one to Daniel. Daniel took the cup and looked at the little brown bits floating around in the amber whiskey.
Fuck it, he thought,
and tossed the scotch back. He followed it with a hard exhale and looked at Bob.
Damn, that's good. Thanks. I needed it.
Bob tossed his back and bared his teeth. He looked like a werewolf. Picking up the bottle, he poured another in each cup.
You need another.
Daniel didn't even hesitate this time, though he only downed half of it in the first swallow, actually taking a moment to savor it. He motioned with the cup at the bottle.
Must be nice having that in your desk. Conditions are what you make 'em.
I guess. Couldn't pull that off downstairs. Bob smiled as he lit a cigarette.
Who's going to search me?
Daniel looked out towards Andy, sitting at his console. The video of the shooting was gone, and he was panning the exterior cameras around.
Wonder how things are going outside. I'd like to get the hell out of here if I could, Daniel said. Let's go see.
At the moment, the street was relatively clear. The mobs had dispersed. Fighting tear gas in clubs is one thing, but taking bullets was more than most of them bargained for. Once the powerful funk was added to the concrete canyon, they lost all desire to fight.
How's it look, Andy? Bob asked.
Looks like the animals have returned to their cages for now.
With much effort, Daniel stood up.
Bob, I'm going to take off. I'm sure your cop buddy will want to talk to me. I'll come back tomorrow.
Bob stared at the monitor for a moment, rubbing his chin, then looking at his watch.
Go ahead, go home. You too, Andy.
Andy spun around in his chair.
You sure, boss?
Yeah.
You two get gone while the getting's good.
What about you? Daniel asked.
Me? I'll stay here and keep an eye on things. There are still guys in the building, so I'll be all right.
All right, then. I'm out of here, Daniel said. Andy leapt from his chair.
Me too.
Before you go, Daniel, come in here, Bob said as he walked into his office.
Bob opened the top drawer of his desk and took out a business card and handed it to Daniel.
If you have any trouble, I mean any with the cops, give them this card and call me. Call me before they get to you if you can. This time, don't forget.
Daniel looked at the card. Lieutenant Carlos Delgado, Atlanta Police Department. Complete with office, fax, and best of all, cell phone numbers. He stuck the card in his pocket and headed for the door.
Hey, when you coming back? Bob asked.
Daniel stopped at the door and scratched his head.
Don't know. Do I even need to come back?
That caught Bob off guard. He shrugged his shoulders before replying.
Well, you got me there. Just keep your phone handy in case I need to get in touch with you.
Andy and Daniel left the office and walked down to the garage together. Andy was parked in the first floor of the garage, and Daniel's van was on the top floor.
Be safe, Daniel said, as they headed for the stairs.
You too, man.
Andy headed down, and Daniel went up, taking the stairs two at a time. When he came out of the stairs on the top deck, he went over to the wall and looked over the side at the street. It was empty, like creepy empty. Looking down, he pushed empty shell casings around with his foot. It was surreal, shooting at someone in downtown Atlanta
and no cop showing up to slap cuffs on him. Daniel hopped into the van and headed for the exit, tires squealing as he wound his way down through the decks. Andy was already gone, and the security door was closed when he got to it. As he approached it, the door began to open. He knew Bob was up there watching the cameras. He stuck his arm out and waved at the camera as he pulled through and onto the street. Daniel was very nervous as he drove towards home, remembering his last ride through town. To try and calm his nerves, he turned on the radio. The radio blared news, telling about the riots around the area. The shooting was not mentioned at all. He felt that was a little odd. But then, without the media being able to move around the streets, it wasn't too surprising. He couldn't take the constant talk of riots, looting, shootings, and general mayhem. Those depressed him. So he switched to the MP3 player connected to the stereo. He wasn't in the mood for rock and settled on Mumford & Sons instead. Before the first song was finished, he saw the entrance to his apartment complex ahead, and relief washed over him. Pulling into his spot in front of his building, he shut off the van and sat there for a moment, looking around and listening. He was nervous as all hell. Not that there was any obvious danger at the moment. It was simply becoming a way of life, it seemed. Before getting out, he dug around in his bag and found his flashlight. With the light in one hand and his pocket knife in the other, he got out and headed for his apartment. As he went up the stairs, he had the key ready and stuck it in the deadbolt as soon as he reached it. Daniel quickly opened the door and froze in his tracks. He was staring into a giant black hole. At least, it looked giant from where he stood.
"Oh, sorry, dude. Didn't know it was you," Teague said as he lowered the pistol.
"Asshole! You scared the shit out of me!" Daniel shouted.
"Sorry, cuz. It's a little scary out there right now," Teague replied as Daniel stepped past him into his apartment.
Teague stepped out of the door and looked around before closing it. Daniel went straight for the fridge. He needed a beer. He opened one and took a long drink, downing half the bottle. When he lowered the bottle, Teague was just standing there. Daniel set the bottle on the counter and looked at Teague. "What the fuck, man?" Daniel asked.
"Sorry, dude. You been out there? It's scary.
If you only knew." From the back of the apartment, a voice called out, "Is it safe?"
"Who the hell is that?" Daniel asked. "Shit, forgot. Yeah, come on out," Teague called out.
Daniel leaned forward to see who was coming and saw Christy as she rounded the corner. Her face lit up when she saw Daniel, and she quickly moved towards him.
"Hey, babe, I'm so glad you're here," she shouted, as she wrapped her arms around him.
With a beer in one hand and Christy's arms around his neck, Daniel looked at Teague with raised eyebrows.
"She just showed up, cuz."
Christy pulled back, then quickly leaned in and kissed him.
"I was worried about you. The news is saying there was shooting near your office. Is everything okay?"
Christy asked as she looked him over.
"Yeah, I'm fine. Let's go